we have to create the right vibe, you know, the energy, and everybody at the organization has to feel so privileged to be here. It's no other way.
Thanks for listening to the Purely Arsenal podcast. Please follow us on Twitter at Purely Arsenal FP for all the latest Arsenal podcasts.
Welcome to another edition of a Purely Arsenal sit-down podcast. We're back. North London is red. Happy St. Tolerance Day. And I'm joined by two of my most regular guests. I've got Neil Shah with me. How you doing, Neil?
Good. I've got about 20 more grey hairs on my beard, but it's all good. It's worth paying. Worth the pain.
Looks beautiful, mate. Looks beautiful. Oh, absolutely worth it. I'm going to grow one out. Also got James Johnson back with me. Back with a bang. How you doing, James?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm very good. Yeah. Like we all said, 20 years older towards the end of that game. But yeah, all worth it.
That's the thing. I mean, it looked smooth. It looked like it was going to be one of those just, wow, this is amazing. What an amazing away North London derby win. We've never had it so easy. Of course, Arsenal never do things the easy way, do they? So we're going to get into it. But I have to say, I mean, brilliant to win it. Brilliant. I mean, this was the game. I mean, there's still hard games to come. You know, there were still hard games to come. I mean, Bournemouth are no joke either. They were one of the most on-form teams since January. So I'm not taking anything for granted. But let's be honest, in the last, 8-10 fixtures, this was probably one of the ones that stood out alongside City. You knew going into this game that this was their biggest Premier League game in years, you know, absolutely years. Not for anything that they could achieve, but for what they could maybe stop us from achieving. And I think that's what was really sort of fantastic for me anyway, and felt celebratory at the end of it, was that just to know that no matter what happens, they have absolutely no say really in us failing to do so, you know. And I thought that was really, really huge. Now, what was your overriding thoughts end of the game? I mean, delighted to win it, but did you have any sort of mixed feelings at the end of the game because the way it ended, or were you just able to oversee that and be like, nah, love it? Great North London derby win, because in the end it really was, and all that matters is the result. But what were your thoughts at the end of it?
Oh, at the end of it, of course, you're relieved, always relieved, no matter what the score is. To get 3 points over them is wonderful, no matter what the circumstance, whether it's possible chance for winning the league or even it's just beating them and you're ending up eighth in the league. You know, it's just a good feel factor. But unlike them, we're not just here to beat them every season. You know, for them, it's always their game, isn't it? And Keown was on Talk Sport and he was dealing with a few idiot Tottenham fans. It was hilarious to watch. If no one has seen it, it's a clip on it, I think, of it on YouTube. And
I've seen it, yeah.
It's great, isn't it? Oh, Keown's wonderful, isn't it? It's like, look, obviously that's what it is all about for you, you know? And even when you were finishing above us, you still weren't winning nothing. So, but for us, it's... of course, the North London derby is important and it's always good to get one over on them. Nice that Saka got that record, the first one since Ian Wright to score both at the home and away leg. And but it's more than that for us. For us, it's about, you know, trying to achieve more in respect to the bigger picture. And we had to win it. We can't let up. A draw is not good enough. And there is no way that we could have dropped points. Otherwise, you know, it's game over for us. It's about City dropping points, not them, not us, rather. And obviously, coasting in the sense at half-time, I did think we were our affluent best, by the way, but we were still 3-0 up somehow. I actually thought they played or had the better chances, especially with that Romero, whatever his name is. He was their man of the match, without a doubt, for me. He was really on song. He was really trying his best to make life difficult for us. But, you know, they didn't put their chances away. Yeah, obviously, we had a couple of set pieces, which is great, because we've, like, 22 now, I think. We're way ahead of Everton, I think, is second. You know, and the other goal, the second goal was just a thing of beauty. But I thought that they actually had the better chances overall. But I didn't feel that we were uncomfortable, if that makes sense. It's just that we weren't at our fluent best, and that's fair enough. We'd played four times; they'd had 2 weeks off, and of course we're away, and the pressure is more on us because the stakes are so much higher. So I get it. And I didn't find, I wasn't uncomfortable, but how I felt at the end of the game is, yeah, that mistake by Raya really changed the dynamic, put the win back in their sails, and it could have gone so horribly wrong. I'm just glad that he, after that mistake, he redeemed himself brilliantly because he kept control. And that's credit to him and testament to his character that his head didn't drop. And he even said that. He goes, look, I made a mistake, but, you know, I just got on with it. He picked himself up and he just got on with it. And he was professional as could be after that. And then I have to give kudos to Partey and Rice because I thought defending-wise, especially in that last 5-10 minutes, they were absolutely awesome, helping the back four, absolutely brilliant. And a lot of credit has to go to them. So, Jack, James, couldn't be happier. North London is red. We got the points. We're standing with a shout. Like you said, you made an excellent point. Bournemouth are not easy. Actually, I'm fearing Bournemouth more than I am Man United. Man United, I don't know if you've heard that they're putting the whole team up for sale in the summer.
I know. It's like, who's going to buy them?
I couldn't stop laughing when I read that. I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. But it's a joke, right? It's farcical.
Yeah, it's like putting their trophy cabinet up for sale. No one's going to start. No one's going to buy it, are they? No one's buying Tottenham's trophy cabinet. It's the same thing. No. Look, you sum it up well. I mean, James, at 3-2, you get flashbacks. You get flashbacks to the 4-4 and David Bentley when you've already thought you've won it at 4-2 with about 5 minutes left to go. You get flashbacks of Liverpool, you know, at Palace a few years back, 3-0 up and drawing 3-3 to bottle the title once again. Liverpool doing it. But James, what were your sort of overriding thoughts? Where does it leave us, James? Where does it leave us in a title race? We're 1 point clear, but City have a game in hand. It is in their hands. They're on their best unbeaten run. Where do you think it leaves us?
Well, it leaves at the top of the league with a point, doesn't it? At one point we had the points, then we lost them, then we had the games, then we messed up with the games in hand. So it whatever way you want to look at it, whatever way you want to word it and everything else, it's so difficult because you do know that you basically have to be note perfect or otherwise you ain't winning the league. I mean, someone the other day was like, we need to strengthen so much that we go invincible so that we can win it again. And I said to them, that's a great point, and I know Neil believes it's going to happen, but theoretically, we could go invincible, but have more draws, they have more wins, because that's what they're like. they're just an annoying, very ruthlessly efficient, annoying animal that's also financially doped to levels that this league has never, ever, ever seen. Even with all this salary rubbish and everything else coming in, they're still going to find a way until they potentially get expelled or whatever from the league and they're like, get out, because that's what they're going to have to do, because I don't know how they're going to wangle this and get out of this when there's so much going on. All the other clubs are going to be like, hang on a sec, you've took how many points away from me, you've done this to us, you've done that to us. They've got more than, you know, 10 times the charges that we've got, and yet you've done this to us. But especially if those say Nottingham Forest get relegated,
yeah,
they're going to be like, well, you know, okay, yeah, we've been bad anyway, we've been bad as well, which they have been, but they'll be like, but the points deduction didn't help, you know, we had a buffer to be at the start, but now we've lost, you know. So that's the only way I think they're going to stop. But yeah, getting back on point, I think it just, you know, like we said, you've got to hope and pray someone can cause a slip up there and that there's no slip ups for us. And I think that they'd get in that changing room at the end there, should be elated, as always, should always be elated for beating them. But like after we scored the goals, there wasn't as mad celebrations as there's been before.
Very collective. There was a bit, calm.
Yeah, there was a bit of taunting, which I rightfully so, especially with the amount of rubbish both of them were getting on them corners, the two lads. But then they went into huddles. They went into huddles after. And it was like, collectively, right, let's do this, let's do the job, everything else. And then I think that's what they'll need to do. I think, you know, like I put in the group chat, Gabriel or Saliba's got to do a Jens Lehmann on Toure to Raya, pick him up by the neck, don't ever do that to me again type thing, and just go from there. But like Neil said, I like that he, especially even after the game, he came out and done an interview there, didn't he? And he was like, yeah, all on me. I've apologised to them in there. They know it. And I've told them, sorry yeah. about that. And I went, I like that. And like you said, Neil, as well, everything after that point was no perfect. I mean, sorry, you're hearing this for the second time, Neil, but he nearly created an assist, Jack. That big kick that he did to Martinelli, and Martinelli went on that. If Martinelli wasn't shrugged off by, I think it was Kulusevski or whoever, and he ended up getting booked for it, you know, maybe not on the form that Martinelli's on at the moment, but he was through.
Yeah.
And I fancy him one-on-one with that Vicario in that, if he got there, especially against, I think he'd make sure that he didn't fluff his lines this time because it's against them lot. Yeah. And then if that becomes a, what was it? It would have been a 4-1 or 4-2 game. I think it would have been 4-1 at that point. Yeah. That becomes a 4-1 game. You know, we're talking about even more. We're even more elated than we are when it's 3-2.
Yeah, crazily. So, I mean, even the second chance early in the second half is, looking back on it, is like so key. But you're 3-0 up at that point. You're not that frustrated. Mm. But
we'll the Tomiyasu one, the first time I watched it, I was like, oh, but the more when I've seen it again, I'm like, no, you've gone two under. He's just a two under it.
I think if he was
big a bit time. More, yeah. Yeah.
Like Kiwior at home to Liverpool, remember that one? Mm. Just all in his own. But let's go through a bit chronologically. I mean, you know, you're both right. I don't know really where a lot of people talking, just to go back, talking a bit about City versus Spurs. Spurs they'd rather finish 17th than get anything in that game. They genuinely would rather. I've got few people that are relatively sort of level headed. They're like, oh, they've still got to go to Spurs. I'm like, come on. We all remember years where we should never ever think about relying on them for anything. They will not do one thing for us. They'd rather, all those players know exactly what they need to do that day, which to be fair, Spurs are gold medalists that are screwing up anyway. So it's not, they're not going to have to fall into a different category here. They'll go, oh, boys, you know the drill. Do what you usually do. And that'll be that. But let's just remember, I mean, I remember Les Ferdinand being devastated at scoring at Old Trafford because they accidentally went 1-0 up when we were playing Villa on the last day of the season. If they'd got anything at United, we would have won the league. They quickly corrected it within about 20 minutes and let Beckham ping one in with no one challenging him and all this sort of stupid stuff. I think they scored an own goal maybe as well. I can't remember the other goal, but pathetic. They're a pathetic team. Don't ever expect anything from Tottenham. The other three games, you never know what's going to happen. But the Tottenham one, nah, not having it. The only frustration there is, you know, on the flip side, that is absolutely not what Manchester United would be thinking. And that's the frustration. When you've got 14 derbies a season as a London club and as the biggest London club, as we've proven this week, everyone's after you, you know. But let's be honest, everyone's apathetic to Manchester City. Nobody cares. There's only one Manchester City fan out there, and he's a short, stumpy bloke that used to be an Oasis called Noel Gallagher. So there's no one else really out there. No one knows a real Manchester City fan. They don't exist. The club only exists 12 years ago, didn't they? But anyway, that's my rant over. The game started, and there was a few sort of chances at either end. We were playing a lot without the ball. I was really thankful, Neil. I think we talked about it on the post-Chelsea game podcast, and I think we talked about it on the text as well, James, all of us. And we basically all agreed that you've got to go with that team again. In order to win a big game, which we hadn't really done away from home this season, even though we've got a fantastic record against the top six, We needed to go with that team again. Specifically, I think we were mentioning Thomas Partey. We felt we had to. And the weird thing with Thomas Partey, which I think we can all discuss, is you get this sort of attacking sort of prowess, if you like, to be able to transition. But with that, what you've seen in the last two games, and I don't think it's just him by any means, because I think we made some individual errors, but we get that slight sort of defensive vulnerability that goes alongside it. But I think it's a risk that at this moment in time, especially for these big away games, you just have to take. You have to take that risk. And I thought in this game as well, I don't think he's been talked about enough, actually. I thought he was actually very good again. Not quite as good as Chelsea, but I thought he was very, very good again. Neil, let's go to the first goal. We are the... We've scored 16 goals from corners in the Premier League, which is the most by any team in a single campaign since Tony Pulis's West Brom. back in 2016-17. But don't worry, people, they weren't the top goal scorers in the league or top of the league. So there's the differences. But Neil, it's a credit to us, isn't it, that we've Mikel Arteta doesn't leave anything unturned, and he looks at every detail of the game to see what advantages he can get. And Spurs had 2 weeks to understand that Ben White's been doing this all season, and they still did bugger all to support a goalkeeper who is terrible at commanding his box. And it was a joy and a pleasure. But the delivery is really important, Neil, isn't it? I think Saka and Rice, they deliver most of the time pretty terrific set pieces. I remember earlier in the season we were moaning about Trossard being on them. Quickly moved him off, didn't we? And we haven't really looked back. But Neil, touch on the two set pieces. I feel like I've got to talk about them both. They're kind of collective, but fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, very similar. I mean, Saka was getting so much abuse about, you know, obviously going back to the Euros again for those idiot fans. But he obviously went straight over his head, and perfect delivery. And I love it. I love what the set piece coach has done. I mean, you're right, Arteta doesn't leave any stone unturned, but then you've got to give credit to his coaching staff and his coaching team. And that set piece coach has been absolutely wonderful. The fact that he's got, you know, them all literally every single gunner and gooner in the world on that far post, and then all storming in once the delivery comes across. It's just a wonderful thing. You've got them not zonal marking, and they can't see a thing because they're all watching the ball like idiots, which also completely falls into our hands, especially with this system. And then you've got Ben White and his full play with the goalkeeper. It's great. It's just distracting him, and it's just wonderful. I just love, you know what, you couldn't have a better person in our team doing that to the goalkeeper, because he's so comical with it almost. He's like his face. You just look at his face while he was messing around with him. It's not a reaction on him, but it's just hilarious to watch. But you're right, that goalkeeper didn't have a clue, and they obviously didn't even do any homework on it. They were just bereft of any ideas, and they're literally identical in a way. You've got Ben White doing his thing, and then you've got all our players kind of running in and causing mayhem, and it makes their defenders, they can't do anything about it. They're blocked off because you've got a couple of our defenders weaving in such a way that there's nothing they can do about it. It's just too late. And because they're ball watching, they're blind from it all. But the delivery still has to be accurate, which it was on both situations. And do you know what? Their guy to put that ball in, that was a great header. That was a great goal. You know, I remember the commentator saying, there's nothing he could have done, but it looked like he was actually aiming for the goal. I think he might have paid him a couple of quid. It was great. I thought it was a wonderful goal, by the way. I didn't care how it went in. Do you know what? I was saying before to people, just mates and stuff, that I don't care if we win 1-0 with an own goal, we just got to win. And ironically, another own goal by them. It's two in the same season, right? Brilliant. And I think that's where Romero, or his name is, was trying so hard, because he's the one that scored the own goal in the, you know, in the reverse fixture. But it was great to see. And then the second one, Kai Havertz is so far away at the far post, and then the way he just, you know, bolts in. But Tomiyasu also has, not just Ben White, but Tomiyasu, I think, has a big hand to play in the second one. But great delivery. Again, you've got Little Britain's duo giving Rice loads of grief. I couldn't believe it. I saw the picture that Michael put up, and then I watched the highlights, and I thought, my God, it's actually them. You couldn't make it up. You could not make it up. And they were giving him such hassle, and he just answered them. I think he looks back, didn't he? He looks back after it was. But what a great delivery from him. But you're right. I'm glad it's those two on the corner. Sometimes I've always said that. Why do our best scorers or top scorers take corners? They should be in the box. But I think this has worked out perfectly. A massive thank you to the set piece coach.
Sorry, I was on mute. So I always do that once. It's tradition. Well, Rice is dangerous from set pieces, isn't he? I mean, Manu at home, for example. So it's a big call to go and take one of our bigger aerial threats away, because we know his delivery is going to be better than maybe what we could provide from other people. It's just really, really clever. We obviously thought about that, because Trossard was, I think he was the one that was taking a lot of the corners. But really clever the way we're whipping it in. We're whipping it in with pace. We've got a real intention, you know, of trying to oftentimes just beat that first man, haven't we? And that's what we did with the Havertz one, like you said, who we'll get onto, because I do think he was up there with a man of the match type performance, but there's one or two others that you can certainly discuss. But yeah, it was an own goal last season that started it all off at Spurs. It's our first time back-to-back away wins at Tottenham since 1988, which is quite incredible under George Graham. But James, just going to you, I mean, we're kind of going off in chronological order. After that first goal, they had, you know, they had a couple of chances and they had a goal and it was disallowed. And I have to say, although we were fantastic from set pieces, Romero was quite dangerous for them from set pieces, wasn't he? He hit a post. I don't know if that was from a set piece. I think it was from Maddison, maybe free kick. They also had one that just went wide, I think, before that, which was kind of like a warning sign. So defensively, we weren't terrific from set pieces. I do feel we got a real hang of that, you know, in the second half, surprisingly, which is when we conceded two goals. But little bit lucky with that offside, James, would you say? It's a correct decision. We had the same go against us at Everton away this season. I think it was this season where Martinelli went through and it got called because of a deflection from Gabriel or something. But we rode our luck a little bit there, James, because it was basically inches, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it, like we were saying before, it's always sort of a cagey game. And no matter what form we're in or what form they could be in, you raise your level for this game. And they were especially going to raise the level because, like you said earlier, a bit like Everton against Liverpool the other week, we are your closest. I mean, for me, they're a noisy neighbour. I don't really class them as my rival. Growing up in the era that I did, it's probably the same as you, Jack. Man United. Yeah. I see, even now, I see Chelsea more as a rival than them. However, I understand it. And they wanted to be, you know, they wanted to ruin the Arsenal party. And so they were going to throw everything in the kitchen sink at it, which they did. And yeah, we were a bit fortunate. I mean, I've seen a lot of them come out and say about, oh yeah, but the possession and it. And I'm like, yeah, we gave it to you in areas where we knew you weren't going to do anything. I'm like, you had the ball, you know. Again, how they play reminded me in a way of what we used to be like before we turned the corner and went in this new direction. Unless you're absolutely critical and finish these chances, you're going to give up goals from set pieces, which we used to do all the time, or you're going to give up goals away on the break, like really easy, simple goal. But you've got a very good centre back, but you've got a fullback out there who's dog, which is sort of like what Arsenal used to. You know, if you left some of our old players on their own, yeah, a Saka is going to chop you to bits, a bit like what he did there. That Ben Davies should not be anywhere near a starting lineup in the Premier League. Shouldn't be anywhere near it. And yeah, for me, yeah, we rode our luck a bit, and obviously we did get punished the second half, but we've done enough. I mean, at half time, we all put it in the group chat. I was like, ramp up the goal difference. Let's kill them. Didn't get it done. But we still got the win. Momentum, I think, still on our side, and we just got to go into the next one and carry it on, Jack. But yeah, no, we did ride our luck a bit there. But like Neil and you spoke about earlier, all three of the goals, in their own way, are all beautiful, because you've got the own goal, which was hilarious, and their fans are like, oh, you know, terrible corner from Saka, but we have to head it. I'm like, if you actually watch, that's the area we've played it in all season. We hang it into that little bit there. So it's not a terrible corner. It's actually the corner that's perfect. And again, yeah, all credit to the set piece coach. I mean, when he come in, we were 17th in the league from scoring from set pieces. Now we're top. And that just goes to, and I think, again, it's like I was saying before, Mikel's looked at every facet of our game and studied it and gone at it. And it's anywhere that we can gain any kind of advantage from anywhere on the pitch. I want that done. Come on then, show me what you know. I remember years and years ago, the amount of flack Liverpool were getting for having that throwing coach. then all of a sudden they took that quick one, didn't they? And the corners and, you know, that quick one that they scored against Barcelona in the Champions League. And they were like, that's why we've got this coach and doing all this. And yeah, I think anything that can get you, what is it, an extra 5 or 10% of an advantage in a game, do it, because we reap the benefits.
Yeah, just on the flip side, I mean, fantastic from obviously forward set pieces. Defensively, City have only conceded 2 set pieces this season. We've conceded 6. We're still in the top. I think we're second, maybe. But again, that might be an area that I think because we were a little bit lucky on a couple of set pieces defensively. Just positionally, Partey lost his position a little bit. Romero got a free header. City don't concede anything from set pieces. They just don't defensively. And I think that's one area that Jova, it looks like, hopefully has capability to just bring us up a level a little bit there, because we've got to get closer to them on every metric, haven't we? But yeah, absolutely. I mean, going forward from set pieces, we're such a danger. And you can tell, I think we, as Arsenal fans as well, we've got to get used to Mikel Arteta. He likes to play without the ball in times. There's certain games that he just likes to play without the ball. And we're really good at playing without the ball. And I don't ever remember ever saying that under Arsene Wenger. I never remember saying, if you didn't have the ball under Arsene Wenger, you were in trouble. You were in trouble, right? The very least, what you wanted to see was, there you go, first minute. We're dominating the ball. It was almost like a comfort, wasn't it? But whereas Mikel Arteta, especially in these types of games where we know other teams might want to dominate the ball and they're in their home stadium, he's so happy to give it up to him. And in this game, I thought the first half was really just proof of that. He was so comfortable with it. And we were dangerous from early on. Havertz scored early on, and it was just inches offside as well. And we were dangerous from very, very early on. And I thought it was fantastic. James, I'm going to stick with you because I went to nil for the other 2 goals. The second goal was probably, I know you said the other 2 were fantastic and great, but the second goal was kind of epitomised the 2 best players in the game, which were Havertz and Saka. Talk about the goals and then maybe come back and talk about, you know, Spurs' frustrations with so-called penalty calls, which objectively, of course, I don't think were either.
Yeah, no, I'm one of them. If I think it is, I will say it. And both of them, to me, I think that, and a few of the respectful Spurs fans that I know and I work with said that we went down. They were livid with Maddison, especially about how much that he was going down. And they were like, you're constantly looking for penalties. And
he was dreadful.
One of them said to me, the reason why Oliver didn't give the one that actually was on first call is probably because all game he's seen Maddison and Kulusevski, you know, and he's like, you know, he's thrown himself on the ground as well now. Like the one that is the most obvious penalty, because again, yeah, he's attempted to play the ball, but he's booted him in the gonads. Like there's no way around it. He has, so it's got to be a penalty. But yeah, the goal, the Kai Havertz. You think about Kai Havertz 5, maybe 6 months ago. He plays that ball backwards, Jack.
Yeah,
he's too frightened to try and ping a ball like that to somebody. But now that he's got three goals and an assist in 2 London derbies in a week, he's full of beans, this boy. He's got a new lease of life. He's like, I am going to try more ambitious, you know, I am going to ping this diagonal ball and see what happens. And I know that Gabriel got the player of the match, man of the match, whatever you want to call it now. And again, got no problem with that, because like Neil said, especially that last 15 to 20 minutes, I thought all of them defensively were animals. You know, anything that came in that box, they either Raya claimed it or they headed it away, they brushed it away. But for me, I thought Kai Havertz was superb in this game. And I'll also say as well, with Saka, especially when it's last 8 to 10 games of a season, that boy normally dips. And I'm the first one to go, he's played a bit too much. He's not doing what he normally does. And it frustrates me. But again, at the weekend, he stood up and was, I think that's the best game he's had for a very, very long time. I thought he was exceptional against them. And I don't know if that's a case of, like we said, they're going to raise it because it's a North London derby or whatever. But yeah, if he can carry that momentum on, for these last three that we have, then he could carry us to a title because he's that good. We know how individually talented this boy, you know, he's been 19 and carried a side full of international players, Jack. We've seen it. But it's like, can you carry us to that, you know, that promised land? Because he deserves to. For everything that he did when the team was muck, you know, when we used to come on here and we had to talk about stuff that was absolute garbage, the only shining light we had was that young little boy. And now he's becoming a man, and it's like, come on then. You know, as much as I want it as a fan, I want it for these players as well, Jack, because I feel like they deserve it. Plus, I get worried that if we don't get one, they could end up elsewhere eventually. So, but yeah, no, he was remarkable, Saka, the other day, and Kai Havertz. And yeah, I just hope that we carry obviously the momentum through. And there was a bit there with Saka as well, first half, and it was like I can't remember if it was Davis or it might have been Romero or who, and they were trying to shrug him off, and he sort of dipped his arm and then spun, and I'm just like, no one goes on about how freakishly strong this kid is. You know what I mean? As much as I hated him as a player and also as a person, Ryan Giggs was all limbs. He was gangly and everything else. He wasn't, you know, he was very thin, gangly guy. But he just used to be, he was so strong. Ryan Giggs was so freakishly strong. You couldn't shrug him off a ball. And Saka's reminds me of that, but no one ever mentioned that. They don't mention his strength because they all the time, oh, look at him, he's limping again. And I'm like, yeah, because he's been, you know, this is a guy that's been booted in the air by MacArthur. You know, he got volleyed like he was a football. But I'm like, this guy rides it and rides it. And I don't know if that's because every day in training, he's up against Saliba and Gabriel. And it's a bit like the old days with Keown, where Keown was like, well, you can make it through me, you'll make it through Saturday because there's no one harder than me. So I don't know if them two all week in training are like bang out that, or if he's up against, you know, Ben White's annoying. We've seen it. I don't know if Ben White's digging his ribs or pinching his arms when he's trying to do something in training that makes him strong. Whatever it's happening, it's working. And yeah, I just hope for the next three games he carries it through, because that was his best game for many a week for me.
Yeah, it was a complete number nine performance. And it's not like we've not seen it. I mean, we saw it 3 days earlier almost, didn't we? I mean, Neil, it might do. But there's been reports that it could be well changing our plans for the summer. I said on a tweet and on a text earlier today, the more I'm watching him, the more I'm starting to think, because we all feel we need something additional in the upper third of the pitch. And I think we still do, and I think we'll still get it. But it might end up, Neil, being more of a wide forward that we focus on rather than that sole central striker. I hope still we get a central striker, because I don't think Eddie Nketiah will stay, and I'm not certain what Jesus's future is either. So even Kai Havertz is our number nine. Going into next season, I'll be delighted, but we need another, you know, we need something a little bit different, ideally a little bit more clinical, because that's one thing that I don't think he'll ever be truly fully, though he's, you know, his numbers are fantastic for someone that's started only 9 games at central striker, but I think all season the rest have been all like central midfield. But Neil, is the beauty of Mikel Arteta that he buys these players that, like Ben White, like Kai Havertz, like Tomiyasu, with maybe a different intention when he purchases them. Tomiyasu was intended to play right back. Ben White was intended to play centre back. Kai Havertz, centre midfield. But what he knows is he brings in these players that have such character and have the versatility already within their careers. They all had it in their background, right? They all had played in these different positions, that he knows they're just good enough to be able to adapt. If he sees something different, he can adapt them, and that's where the purchase fee is. So that's where you get your value for money, isn't it? You bring in players, something's not quite right in the system where they're sitting. It's fine. They'll fold in, they'll adapt here, and they'll sit there. And those types of players are really epitomise Mikel Arteta's teams that can adapt to an ever-changing environment. Even within game, we've seen it, right? Havertz drops to the 8, back to the 9, blah, blah, blah. Ben White, same thing, drops inverted, stays as a right-back, goes centre-back. Like, it's quite impressive, isn't it, Neil? But with Havertz, I don't think any of us, even in our wildest dreams, could have imagined, especially in the first half of the season, that he'd have this amazing second half of the season. I mean, he's been absolutely terrific, and I thought this may have been one of his best.
just before, I just want to mention a couple of things, but yeah, habits for me, I've got so much to say about him. He's my favourite player at the moment. As good as Odegaard is and has been, Havertz to me has become, I think he's the most improved player, and I think he's probably up there as one of the most invaluable at the moment, especially for this last three games. I feel, just to answer your question about Arteta and signings, we haven't really had a bad signing for a while. And it feels like an eon ago since we had Niles, who was unwilling to change and adapt because he wanted to play in that middle position. And no, we'd rather be playing, you know, as a defender, and no, I don't want to do that, I'm a midfielder and blah, blah, blah. Now you've got characters that are willing to play for the club more so than themselves. Even if it makes them uncomfortable for a while, they're willing to change and adapt, and then not just do it, but do it so brilliantly. Ben White, arguably the best in his position now in the country, you'd say, right? Kai Havertz, midfielder, look at him as a number nine. And as you rightly said, Tomiyasu as well, even, wasn't he brought back as brought in as maybe a more of a central defender? He's playing on the left hand, so no, he's brought him for the right, wasn't he? Of course,
yeah, right.
Now he's on. So you know, you've got.
You can mention Kivior. You know, centre back cover for Gabriel, yeah, and he plays left back most of the time.
He goes on and on, doesn't it? Rice, even 6-8, you know, so many.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, he just list goes on. I mean, maybe Saka started the mold or the trend, because Saka's played in every blooming position there is, bar the goalkeeper. And he just did it, didn't he? He just got on with it, no matter what position you threw him in. So I think that's a testament to our scouting squad and Arteta and Edu especially, that they're seeing that in players, and that's helping us so much, because it gives us that flexibility, and also it covers injuries too. Even if we've got a fully fit squad, it gives us the options to chop and change. But if there's an injury, we've got the coverage. Oh, it's just brilliant. But just quickly, two things. Partey, that goal that I completely forgot that we'd actually scored and he was offside. But that pass to Odegaard from Partey, that was tremendous. Mm. And even Odegaard, what he did, it's just a shame he was offside, because if that goal had been given, I'd say that's one of the goals of the season.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful move. And it was a great finish by Kai. Again, Kai Havertz. Kai Havertz, the chance that Saka missed. Again, that was a great chip or a dink from Kai Havertz. That would have been another assist for him. The list goes on. For me, he's just such a complete player at the moment. He is the first. He's equaled Sanchez's record, by the way, of 4 assists and 4 goals. In 4 games, an assist and a goal in 4 games. Sanchez did it in the whole campaign. I think it was 17-18. Kai Havertz has done it in 13 appearances. And that just goes to show. And there's still 3 games left. He could break the record. So he's getting the numbers in a big way. And I think he's a complete player. He's a target man for the defence. He's or Raya. He holds the ball up brilliantly, as we saw even yesterday. He's scoring goals. He's a nuisance to the defenders. He's scoring with his head and his feet. And I you know what? You're right. I don't think while he should just be the number nine next season, we do need a striker. But boy, can he do a job if he's called upon to do it. He's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. And that goal reminded me, sorry, James, I'm going to tread on your toes about this, but Bold and Adams against Everton, when Adams said to Bold, I'm going. It reminded me a bit of that, because if you look at Saka, 2 times he's raising his arms saying, here, do it, pass it to me. But what a great pass. Wasn't easy. That was pinpoint at his feet. And then Saka still controlled it. One first touch. He still had a lot of work to do. Obviously goes on his favourite left foot. But boy, oh boy, that was a masterpiece of a goal. Absolutely brilliant. I am waxed lyrical about Kai Havertz at the moment. He is really tremendous. And I just want to say, on their offside goal, I did mention it on Michael's pod actually, but I found it just makes me laugh. I'm glad that Gabriel hasn't done his extra glute sessions, because otherwise his bum would have been slightly bigger, and you know, then that might have been onside. So thank God. Thank you, Gabriel. I know you're a lovely, beautiful human being, but I don't want your ass being that big, because you know, it could save us.
Yeah, I have to say, when they were drawing the lines, I was annoyed with how he was positioned. I was like, why aren't you standing up straight, Gabriel, for crying out loud, squatting down like you're about to use a toilet? I was very frustrated. But then obviously when they said it was offside, I went, perfect, Gabriel, you know exactly what you're doing. I don't know why I questioned Gabriel on offside. He knows, ever since the Garnacho one, I shouldn't question him. He knows exactly what he's doing. Everyone says it's, you know, it's perfect. James, if you need a pop off for a second, yeah, just let me know and I'll come back to you in a second. If you're around, I know James has to pop off a second. But Neil, you sum up Havertz really well. I watch it and I get curious, and I know Mikel Arteta is thinking like this, and it can change our plans, and we'll see in the summer. It's not important for now. What's important is how he's thriving in this team. But Saka, 15 goals, 9 assists in the Premier League this season, 31 goal involvements, I think it is, overall in the season. But that's 24 out of 33 Premier League games. I mean, and people say he's not had a great season. I mean, this guy's doing up Salah-like numbers. In the thing when people compare him to Salah, I do find it a little bit frustrating, because Salah is amazing. I mean, he's had a poor sort of latter part of the season, but he's been one of Liverpool's probably greatest ever players. But defensively, there isn't a comparison. I watch Liverpool a lot. There is not a comparison in what Saka does for our team defensively and what Liverpool do. They don't play like that. They don't, their midfielders do a lot of that work, where we really require our wingers to go back and forth. Salah's almost a free man for them. We don't really have that. It doesn't really exist in our system, that type of player. And that's why his output, he's fantastic, but that's why his output will always be very, very difficult to compare against, you know, wingers under Mikel Arteta, in my opinion. But Bukayo Saka, the fact that he's up there, and he's also, you know, he's 22. Salah didn't even arrive at Liverpool till he was 26. So, and he wasn't doing up numbers at all before that. So, you know, you don't know what the trajectory is, but I think he was fantastic in this game. He just, Ben Davies, I don't know, I can't believe they didn't change him, to be honest. You know, he was running right against Ben Davies from minute one and they didn't change him. And I have to say, for all the sort of positive chat that manager gets, I think he's really tactically naive to not look at the set piece thing. When Spurs fans, if you listen to them, I'm sure you've heard some of their stuff after the game. It's fantastic, isn't it? But they all just are so frustrated because they've seen these set pieces all season. I think they're one of the worst. They've conceded double the amount of set piece goals than we have before this game. And they, you know, they couldn't address it. And I also think, I know you said Romero, I mean, he was all of their big chances, bar you know, maybe obviously the penalty to Son just came through Romero. But I don't think that's a tactical thing from it. I don't think he's telling his centre back to go and play up front in the 50th minute. Do you know what I mean? Even, you know, there was a header in the 50th minute where he got in front of Gabriel and he headed it over the bar. And I remember seeing that thinking, like, why can't we handle this? I remember in the back of my mind thinking, why is he up there constantly? I know they're 3-0 down, but he's not being told to do that. I mean, he's basically playing centre forward. And I don't think that's been told by the manager. I think he's just doing it because they've basically got two centre backs that basically want to be the heroes. And that's the last thing you want your centre backs to be. He reminded me of Gary Doherty. Do you remember Gary Doherty for Spurs? The ginger lad who used to play centre back some games, play up front some other games. The problem with Romero is he's playing centre back, but he just pops up front. And I was watching it thinking, yeah, you're majorly dangerous and you deserve your goal because you've had a few chances, but where are you when they need you at the back? You're all over the place. And Van de Ven, I mean, he's like a road runner, but he's unbelievably fast. But positionally, nah, I'm not having him either, really, to be honest. I mean, he's all so it's a very interesting sort of setup with Tottenham, and let's see tactically how he is. But they're going to be in Europe next season. They've had the least possible games this season out of any club in the whole league. Got knocked out of the clubs early. They've literally had the least possible games you could have, and it's going to be a really interesting wake up call to them when they've got to play two games a week and go Thursday nights, which is looking like what it's going to be. It's going to be very, very interesting for them, I think. So let's see. But you know, we go in at 3-0 at half time. Maybe score flatters us slightly. I mean, they've had a couple of chances. We probably got a little bit lucky not to concede, I think, in the first half, but we were super, supremely clinical. The odd thing is, Neil, I don't think we came out with a bad attitude in the second half. I think we came out with our best performance in the first 15 or 20 minutes in the second half. And I agree with a couple of other people that were sort of tweeting this. I think we were 5 or 10 minutes away from Spurs just packing up and going home, really, collectively. And I remember they made, just before the Rea mistake, they made a few changes. They brought Richarlison on, and I remember thinking, okay, get through this next 5-10 minutes and we're home and dry, kind of thing. And I don't know about you, but I was so upset with David Raya. I mean, so, so frustrated. And he was, you know, it's an unforgivable mistake, Neil. And I'm his biggest fan. I actually think he's been the best goalkeeper in the league this season. If he bears it out for the next three games and he clicks, you know, responds like he did to this mistake, I think not because of the Golden Glove that he might win. I think he's been the best goalkeeper in the league this season, especially since the turn of the year. He's been absolutely fantastic. But that is a dreadful mistake, Neil. At a dreadful moment where you've just given them a little bit of hope, where it was so close to being completely dashed, wasn't it?
Yeah, Jack, I was fuming. First and foremost, you're absolutely spot on about Raya. I'm going to sound like a broken record. How many times have I come on the pod and said to you that it took a while for me to warm to him, but then, you know, I've realised now how good he is. And I exactly know what Arteta has seen in him. I know why Arteta wanted him even before he got Ramsdale. I get it. Look, I still feel a little bit of sympathy towards Ramsdale, but at the end of the day, we've got to go with what's best for the club. And he's definitely more, for me, the complete keeper. I think I loved Ramsdale because he's, you know, a little bit off the wall personality as a keeper, a bit mad. He was, you know, winding up the away fans and the passion and the emotions he used to show. I think I love all of that. And I think that's why I warmed to him a lot. And let's not forget, he did make some incredible saves. I mean, saves that no keeper should be allowed to get anywhere near. He was making them, if you remember, in his early days. So I think, you know, he won the fans over very, very quickly. But now I see what you were saying and what Arteta is obviously seeing in Raya. And I think he's the perfect keeper for us going forward, especially now for the next, hopefully, 3-4 years where we could potentially dominate or challenge at least. But having said that, the mistake, yeah, I felt the same. I thought we were very, very controlled in the start of the second half. I was watching it with a mate of mine, and I said to him, I said, we surely now we get that fourth goal, they're going to pack up. And for Tottenham to give up against us, you know, it's almost unheard of. But I just think they will, because we've got them on toast here. And then what Raya did completely, almost, I wouldn't say undermines the game, but he undermines the dynamic, completely unsettled us. Everyone's like now on, all of a sudden, the back foot. And you know for a fact, them getting that goal in that manner as well, it's not that they created it. It was an error on our part. By doing that, the fans, the stadium erupts, all the players get a wind in their sail, and it was all back foot stuff for us from then, I think. And to be honest, I think we've done well to hang on as a result of that. And I put a tweet out and I was thinking, I'm really upset with you, Raya. That was stupid, really stupid. And then people, I think quite rightly, then started saying, look, don't start adding fuel to the fire and, you know, getting on his back and stuff. And I wasn't getting on his back. I was just saying it's unsettled. You know, end of the day, I was a nervous wreck. I'm sure you were as well, Jack. Yeah. And you know, you're in control. And all of a sudden this happens. And you've got to remember, we're playing with fine margins here, Jack. We are up against that machine that James perfectly described earlier, Man City. They're not going to make mistakes. We have to match them goal for goal, game for game, point for point, and error for error or non-error, if that makes sense. And we made a massive error. We can't do that. We just cannot do that. And I was just like, look at what he's potentially done. If Spurs get back and score that equaliser as well, that's it. We're out. We're gone. There's a good chance we're not going to win, even if we win our three games. But at least it gives us a better chance, doesn't it? Right? We're still in it, and potentially we're taking City to the last game of the season, which is what we can all ask for now. It's all we can hope for. But that would have thrown that all away. And so I was livid with him. But then looking back on it, you see how he reacts on given that mistake. And he was flawless afterwards, I felt. Absolutely flawless.
Yeah.
And that's such a big testament to his character. And like you guys said earlier, he comes on an interview afterwards and he admits it. He said, look, I made a mistake. But I didn't put myself down. I love that about him. He said, he didn't get me down. His head could have dropped, Jack. And he could have been calamitous for us. But he didn't. If anything, he arguably, I know this sounds stupid, but he could have been one, after that error, he potentially was man of the match. In a way, because he was so commanding in the box after that. He was like, I'm not letting that, they're not getting past me now, not after that error. Yeah, all right, the penalty's a penalty. You can't legislate for that. And that wasn't his fault, nothing to do with him. But other than that, he was pretty much flawless. So it could have been a massively costly mistake. Thankfully, it wasn't, and we just move on from there. But that certainly doesn't make me think that we need to address the goalkeeping position. No bloody way. All we need to do is look for a keeper that's going to be number two. That's it. Just a quick one before we go on. Kai Havertz, again, I know I'm going on about him because I'm enamoured by him at the moment. Defensively, he's good as well. I think he made 4 clearances in defence. So he's doing the defensive job, but that's not just him. I love the way Martinelli did something which stopped, I can't say his name, Kubasic, he stopped him. He did a good, yeah, guess it. He stopped him. And I think it is, and even Jesus does it. So our forwards, at least, like you were talking about Salah, who doesn't do that work, but our wingers and our forwards also get involved in all that part of the game, which is fantastic for us at the moment, Jack. It's what we need.
He won 8 aerials. The next closest to him was 1, which was Gabriel. 8 aerials Kai Havertz won in this game. Obviously, you know, attacking and defensive wise, but you know, that's such a valuable type of player to have, you know. And you know, the one thing he brings to our front line, which is so, it's such a simple way of looking at it, but he brings height to our front line, doesn't he? He brings presence and height. I mean, we are very small up there, especially when Trossard's starting. You know, if we had Trossard, Jesus and Bukayo Saka, it's a very, very short front line. And that's why I'm personally convinced we'll not only bring in a wide player before we think about a central player, but we'll bring in a tall wide player, or a wide forward, if you like. That's what I'm pretty convinced of, because I think we're seeing some of the value there to what those players can bring, especially if they're great with their feet, like Kai Havertz is proving to be. But yeah, Neil, you're right. It was a dreadful mistake from Raya. The thing that upset me the most about it was, I wanted to enjoy the last 20 minutes, to be honest, selfishly. I wanted to relax and enjoy it. And I was getting very close, not close enough, but very close to it. And it was a really poor error. My frustration was I couldn't see why he was trying to do what he did. The other errors he's made, you know, like Lons away, for example, it's almost understandable. Yeah, it got cut out, but you could see exactly what he was trying to do. He was trying to play that pass out wide to Tomiyasu to break. In this one, I'm like, I don't know what you're trying to do there. I don't know why you're doing. We're 3-0 up. If it's any question, just go long with it. You were doing that beforehand, and there's no need. We don't need to play out fast here. The onus is entirely on them. And that was my frustration. But you're right. They put him under huge pressure, not in terms of sort of rushing the goal. We actually didn't concede a lot of chances after that moment at all, if you watch back the last 20 minutes. But they threw everything into the box, didn't they? Every ball. And his handling, he's so opposite to Tottenham's goalkeeper, who punches everything. But he just tries to catch absolutely everything. And his percentage of catches are about 12.5% this season. And I think the average in the league is somewhere around 5 or 6. He's by far and ahead the best collector of crosses in the league, and it's such a valuable tool for the defence to feel confident in the person behind him, I think. And I have to say, yeah, with all the Ramsdale stuff, Ramsdale's made errors too, but I'm not certain he reacts like that in that manner if Ramsdale makes that error against, I don't know, what did he do, Southampton last season or whatever it was, a similar type error. I'm not sure we get that type of reaction. But Neil, as poor as his error was, I think it's fair to say Declan Rice's error was just as poor. It felt lazy to me. It felt like, not lazy, that's a bad way of saying it, tired. It looked tired to me. It looked like he was fatigued and he went to clear a ball and he wasn't aware of his surroundings, because he wasn't blindsided by it. He was there, but he just looked tired and fatigued. And at that point, I was just like, well, Declan Rice knew, he threw his head up in the air. You knew it was a pen. You knew they were calling it back. I don't know why Spurs fans are moaning about it. I mean, it was given. That's what VAR's there for. It's there to give it. They're moaning that he didn't see it in real time. And I'm like, but that's why it's there, to give it. Do you know what I mean? You got the right call in the end. And suddenly, Neil, we're in for the worst 10 minutes. And I have to say, from a person like you who watches all the games, this was one of the first times in a long time I actually considered turning it off and going for a walk. I genuinely felt that sick. I was like, I don't think I want to watch the rest of this game, because I felt it was inevitable. I think we all texted it. We went, we've absolutely screwed this up. That's it. You know, I think we all texted something like that. And I went, I don't want to see out this last 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, it was awful, Neil. How did you feel in that moment? I mean, same, I presume.
Awful, because Rice, that was so uncharacteristic of him as well. So uncharacteristic. I looked at it again and thought, what are you doing? It's like, it's like you're kicking out. You're there, you're right, he's not blind. He's just doing it almost as if, it's almost like a comedy sketch. I just couldn't believe it. And it's just so unprofessional and so unlike him. And yeah, you're right. I think I've never thought of that. I think maybe it's just tiredness. Because you've got to remember, he has given everything from the start of the season. I don't think he's missed many games, has he, if any? I don't think he's missed many. And he's been there and such an engine for us. And maybe there is, and just on that, just quickly digress, I think that's the issue with Odegaard. I think Odegaard could be carried. I think, he froze there. Is that me again?
You're back just for 3 or 4 seconds. Right. Carry on.
Where was I? So did you hear me? What I was saying? I think it reminds me a little bit of Odegaard as well. I think Odegaard could be carrying an injury, Jack. Or he's
just tired. Himself, did he?
Yeah.
Or he's exhausted. I mean, 4 games since their last one. Insane.
I think so. But because it could be a knock as well, because he took a couple even during the game. And I felt that he, because he's the captain, and he's doing it so well, he just feels like, I've got to carry on. I'm going to see this through. And it did frighten me a little bit, because he was taken off, wasn't he, about 6 or 7 minutes to go? He was taken off. And I thought, no, we can't lose him now. We need our captain.
Was a really interesting sub, wasn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, that's right. But I felt the same. Going back to your question, I was like, oh, that's it. And I kept saying, I was with Dean. I don't know if you ever met Dean. I said to him, that's
it.
Yeah,
I know Dean.
So we've blown it. I can't believe it. Why did we do this? We were in absolute control. And it did remind me of the 2-2 with West Ham, the 2-2 with Liverpool. I thought we were in such control. We've done it again. Surely not. But you know what? We saw it through, Jack. And I know
really calmly, in a way.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. And I still will go back to Partey and Rice. If you watch back those last 5-10 minutes, you just watch their movement. They weren't necessarily getting the last foot in to stop the attackers, but they were really helping Gabriel or Saliba or anyone in defence with their movement. Like you were talking about earlier, Arteta's got that down to a T, the off-the-ball movement now. We're so good at it. Wenger was all about possession. Jorginho would have been perfect for Wenger's team, because Jorginho is so much better with the ball. Players down, not to give them space to be able to do anything effective. I think they deserve a lot of credit, but defensively as a collective, we were great. We held on, we held our nerve. Somehow we saw it through to the end. Did you see the relief on Raya? Because he was that ball that Son had put through.
And
he was
Gabriel
on the floor.
Jumped over him.
And then he was like, as soon as he had the whistle, he just saw, and I think that was a lot of relief on his part, because I think he probably did feel very responsible to change the whole dynamic of the game after that. And I think he was so relieved. But you know what? As I said, we got the points. And Saka said the same thing. I remember his interview, and the guy goes, well, you've got 3 games left. You don't want to go through this for the last 3. He goes, well, it's 3 points. So why not? 3 points. That's what counts. And then the guy goes, yeah, stupid question. And Saka walks off.
Yeah, it was good for the interviewer, though, wasn't it?
It was good for the interviewer. Yeah, it was.
He was humble enough to say it.
That's what, Jack, that's what matters. We're still in there. I know it's going to take a miracle for City to slip. We're all seeing it before. Liverpool, you know, they lost one game and got 97 points and they still didn't win the league. I think what James said earlier was actually a good point. We could go unbeaten and they could still not end up winning it because of the way City are just machines.
We can only
I think the only team I see, Spurs ain't going to do us no favours, that's for sure. Wolves, I think, I just hope that they don't destroy our goal difference. I think the only team that potentially could give them an issue, this is my opinion, is Fulham away for them. I know they didn't do it for Liverpool, but they may do something to help us. Hopefully your favourite goalkeeper, Biscuit Hands, does us a favour. But let's wait and see anyway.
I find it very hard to believe that City will drop anything at this point. But like you said, you just want to keep winning our games and pushing them. Don't do what we did last season and lay it for them on a plate, because that would really frustrate me. And I know, look, if we do and they see it out and win all their games, like lots of people, you know, expect them to do, I know people will look at it and they'll go, oh, the Villa game, you know, cost us. But in the end, it's the collective. It's not one moment or one game. It's overall. And if you didn't get enough points overall, you look at it. I hate it when people go, oh, it was that game, because they've had games like that. They haven't lost a game at home, but they were 2-0 up to Palace with 10 minutes to go at home and drew 2-2. And no one remembers that. They had no players at the time, Palace. None of them. Eze was injured. All of them were out. Elise came on for the last 5 minutes to score the penalty. That was it. He wasn't even playing. And so it was a way worse Palace team that we came up against. They lost to Wolves away, for example. You know, they've had games like that too. Do you know what I mean? They've had games like that too. And you know, since the turn of the year, if we can win out, you couldn't have asked for more. So it's just, you know, it is what it is. You're dealing with a, you know, the Lance Armstrong as football, as I call them. And you know, it skews it to the point where you have to analyse every little minor detail of your season, and it becomes really, really silly at that point. You know, of course, it'll be frustrating. But yeah, like you said, just win our games, win on Saturday, and then go from there and see what happens. You know, people talk about this game and Spurs having more of the ball and maybe more chances. It's nothing compared to what City had at the weekend. I mean, they were dominated at the weekend and won 2-0 at a much lower team in Forest. So, you know, at this point, it's just all about winning your games, no matter how you do it, really. And we managed to do that off the back of a really tough run in. I mean, Chelsea midweek, very taxing game. We, you know, Bayern last week, they still hadn't played a game at that point, Tottenham. I mean, they really, you know, had precious legs going, which made me worry more in that last 10 minutes. And I think defensively, really what it was two big errors, silly errors, like the errors we talked about in the first half of the season. We were sitting on it every week going, we don't concede any chances, but we can keep conceding goals from stupid errors. And this was a bit like that game, wasn't it? It was one of those games where you just, like, you know, especially with the goals, it was just like they were just two big errors, you know, and that's what it was. But I thought we saw it out superbly, to be honest. I mean, my nerves were getting to me and it felt horrible, but when you watch it back, like you said, I thought we saw it out superbly. We do have to sort of touch on Thomas Partey a little bit. I mean, to come back into a team, I know we're never going to get over his fitness issues, and I do think the right decision is to sell him in the summer, no matter what. If there's takers, of course, big wage, you know, maybe not such a big fee, but there may not be, or based off his injury record. But to come in after not playing like a minute since like October, in what is the critical part of the season, that is so difficult for a player to do. I mean, to get to that level, do you know what I mean? That is so, so difficult. And he's come in, and I thought he was probably man of the match against Chelsea. And whilst I think Havertz and Saka probably pipped him in this game, I still think it was fantastic. Some people blaming him for the Raya pass, saying, you know, Partey's calling for that ball. And I'm like, I'm sorry, that's all on Raya. That's all on Raya. It's nothing to do with Thomas Partey. And I, you know, I'm not certain the defensive vulnerability in the last two games is really down to him either. I do think we are defensively more vulnerable with him, because Jorginho plays a safer pass more often, and he positionally sits off a little bit more, whereas Partey's more willing to go because he's got a little bit more physicality about him. But I think he's worth it if he's playing like this. I mean, it has to be worth it. And if I'm saying to myself, Jorginho and Partey are going to leave in the summer, which they may well do, they may not. And what do I want? I want something closer to a young Partey than a young Jorginho, if I want. I'm not certain Mikel Arteta does, But he had a highest pass accuracy. I mean, 92.7% against Spurs. I mean, I think he was very good, to be honest, against Tottenham. But what are your thoughts on him? I mean, he's come back in and it's taken him a while to get back in, but now he's back in. I feel like he has to stay for the last three.
I agree. I agree completely. Yes, I wouldn't change it for the last three games. As much I've got so much time for Jorginho, it's untrue. I don't want him to go. You're suggesting that maybe they both go in the summer. No, please. I don't want both of them to go.
I'll be very happy to keep Jorginho, yeah.
Oh, 100% we need him for another year season, I think. Especially if we don't get across the line this season. I think he'll be very important. He'll be an important part of, maybe he might not play as much next season, but he'll be an important part. He'll be great for the dressing room and he'll be there for those key games. I think the thing is, we're in a position, Jack, where we have to win our three games, right? So that does involve, as much control as we could potentially be in those three games, there's still an element that we have to take some risks. And Partey does that because he's progressive. He does drive the ball forward. You know, he seeks out that pass. And I think that's the better option. You're talking about how he's come back. I mean, he's not the perfect article. He's not the Thomas Partey of last season, where for the majority of the season, he was one of the players of the season. Yeah. Yeah, he's unplayable. The command he has in the midfield is stupid. But he's, I think, what, 80% maybe, 85% there? And that's still good for us.
Yeah.
And I think he'll get better and better. And actually, I didn't realise he did see out the 90 minutes, didn't he? He was a substituted, which is unusual for Thomas Partey.
Yeah, good point.
So, I think he's got to play.
Yeah.
He's got to play.
It'll be interesting against Bournemouth, won't it, Neil? Because that is the type of game that you would wonder, does he go for, maybe he does. Does he switch? Because I feel like United away, he's starting. Do you know what I mean? You can't play him against Chelsea and Spurs and see those games. So it'll be interesting, the Bournemouth one. Will he?
Yeah.
Will he do that? You know, I think he will.
I think he'll start.
Yeah.
But if we're flying, then he'll change him and rest him because we need him again for Man United away. So, yeah, I think he'll start. I don't think he'll start Jorginho and bring Partey on. I think it'll be the other way around if that happens.
Yeah.
I think anyway. I mean, to be honest, look, if you wanted, if you were to ask me about Bournemouth, I think the only change that I could see, you might have different ideas, but the only change I can see is Martinelli for Trossard, because I think Martinelli still, although he's not been right, maybe this is the type of game he might do well in. He needs a goal, Jack. He just needs a goal. And I think
or Jesus, to be honest. I feel it's very up in the air on that left wing.
Or Jesus, yeah, of course.
He didn't even come on in this game.
No. And I will be surprised. Actually, I won't be surprised if I don't see him because of what I said earlier. But we need him, and that's Odegaard. I think, again, Odegaard's another one where he may start, and if we see the game, you know, we're flying and we're not going to do another. Yeah. I think then maybe he might come off as well later on, because I think he's carrying a knock.
I think he, against Chelsea, I don't know if he came off early or not, but there was some, I think Arteta reported on something after the Chelsea game with him. So yeah, I mean, look, Odegaard, Havertz, White, Rice, I mean, they've put in an incredible amount of minutes.
Shifts.
I mean, I'm sure you've seen the data on it, but, and this is what differentiates us from Man City and even Liverpool.
Exactly.
To be honest,
it's, I know what you're going to say.
Six out of the top seven. Minutes in the league are our players, you know, and that's incredible. And I know what, if you send it to Liverpool fans, they'll go, oh yeah, you're lucky to have those players fit for that. But to be honest, that's not what you're looking for. You want to get a little, you know, a little bit less minutes on those players. But Saliba's he's played every minute. So Declan Rice, obviously you said, well, is he not played? He came off in the second half against Tottenham at home, funnily enough. That's when Jorginho made that mistake. Beyond that, I don't remember too much other than him coming off early for wins and things like that. And then Odegaard. So the top three are all us. But six of the top seven are us.
Yeah.
Gabriel, Saka and White making up the rest with Van Dijk sandwiching there. So it's unbelievable the amount of minutes these players are putting. But right now, we just can't change if they're fit. They're too,
we need 270 minutes left. We need them.
And yeah, just massive minutes. Just before we touch on the Bournemouth game, because I do want to touch a couple of things and get your prediction. Any favourite sort of clips going around from the Spurs state? Anything you, because obviously we send stuff all the time, but there's some brilliant stuff of their fans moaning. Their fans recording our players is hilarious. There's some brilliant videos.
What's that about?
I don't know what that's about. I do love the Saka one where he's, you know, he's doing the old ears, and I like it because Saka doesn't usually give a lot back to the fans. So he's pretty, you know, he keeps himself to himself really. And I don't know how he restrains himself, to be honest, with some of the abuse he gets. And Spurs are cheeky, saying let your country down when Harry Kane forgot to square it to Sterling when we were up against Croatia. I mean, that's really letting your country down. But there you go. But I thought, yeah, that was brilliant. But there's a few other ones from fans singing in the concourse and, you know, going absolutely mental. It's great, isn't it, watching the clips post-game on both sides when you've won a game like that. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it is funny. I mean, end of the day, I don't still quite get why fans sit there taking videos of themselves all game, but there's that one of that guy, and I think he looks like his granddad or his father, and that's just quite funny because you could just see his face contorting in real displeasure at us, you know.
I've seen it.
And he's like, they've had 2 weeks, 2 weeks. Can't they get their corners? Can't they sort their corners out? And like, and he's like really getting upset and berating the team. And it's hilarious to watch. And then you got the other one with the whole crowd watching the transition, I think, for the second goal. And it's like they're like going mental at the penalties, two penalty chances, apparent penalty chance not given their way. And all of a sudden you've got that beautiful transition. And then it's just the whole crowd is like, what the hell? It's great to watch. But what I really loved is the one where Havertz just sends Madison to the moon, but he just pushes him away.
Yeah, you know,
that's my favourite. That is the one, because it, you know what that epitomises for me, Jack? That epitomises the change from Wenger's era, where Wenger wanted to emulate Barcelona with your famous tweet, all number 10.
Tiki-taka.
And we always were missing the meatheads, those physical bodies that were present in, I guess, when Wenger first took over, where he had
crazy, he went balance. Away from that.
Yes, he had the perfect balance and he stuck to it even through the Invincibles. But after that, then he tried to change the ethos of the club almost. But we've gone back to that, and now we've got a proper spine in the team, where we've got those bigger players, where we used to get bullied so much, especially in those games up north. Remember, we used to get bullied on a rainy, cold day, and we just couldn't handle it. Now we've got the players that do the bullying, as far as I'm concerned. And that's what that reminds me of. White does it a lot. I think, was it White in the Chelsea game? He just bundled the player.
Yeah, Cucurella was beautiful.
So funny. Oh, my favourite player as well. Not, yeah. Love that. Absolutely brilliant. Love that.
Brilliant.
But the way he just pushes Madison away, it's like, you get away. He's like, he's swatting a fly away. Get away
from him. Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it?
And that just shows our mentality, and it just epitomises that. So, yeah, but there's that one that, you know, that picture alluded to earlier, the Little Britain, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That's just, it's like he's a goading Bryce, and then he disappears. He's like,
I've
got nothing
that
to say.
2-0 down. It's just a weird. 2-0 down. 25 minutes in, 30 minutes in, and they go. Like, it's just such a strange fan base, aren't they? Just sit quietly. God, you're embarrassing yourself already. Very funny. But again, fantastic to see. In the end, like you said, hopefully we learn and from those mistakes. Obviously, before this, we'd had 6 away clean sheets, so not massively concerned. But yeah, some of those clips going around are just brilliant. That's the post-game stuff, and I had a really good time. And, you know, I mean, you know, we've qualified for the Champions League and we're looking at that, and we're not really talking about that because of bigger things to think about. And isn't that fantastic, when it was really all we would talk about for a few years, wasn't it? So it shows how far Mikel Arteta has taken us, and that's you know, still some achievement in this league to qualify for the Champions League at that point.
You've got to give him credit, Jack. He's like... He's still young. He's not the youngest anymore, I don't think, but he's a young manager. But it's his first managerial job. That's the thing. People are forgetting that. It's his first job as a manager, right? What's he done? Potentially could have won us the league last season, but got us in the Champions League. His first attempt at the Champions League, quarterfinals. And we didn't lose badly, but we would have loved to have gone maybe one step further, but I think I would have taken a quarterfinal in his first ever go at it. Pep didn't even get out of the group stages, I think, for 3 seasons or something like that. He's done it on his first attempt, Jack. And then, second season running, we could be in for a shout again at the title. I'm sorry. I think no matter what happens now, I think you know, there are people saying that, you know, that he's not the right, still not the right person for the job, and maybe he's stagnated and this is the as far as he can take the club. But number one, the board are not ever going to get rid of him. No way. And not only has he done what I've just described, but he's been a big part, I think, of bringing the fan base together as well. I think he allowed the drums to come in, the Ashburton Army to do what they were doing. And the fan base has been unbelievable. It's been imperious, I believe, for the last 2 years. Absolutely imperious. We've not had that in the Emirates. You know, in Emirates never felt like home, Jack. Never felt like Highbury. But that is coming back now because the noise levels. I'll tell you what, we've heard some great noise levels at the Emirates. The Barcelona game when we won. The Man United game when Henry scored the last minute when Van Persie broke his metatarsal. And some other games as well. But that Bayern game, when it was deafening. It was literally deafening. We haven't had that before. And that says a lot about Arteta because he's encouraged that. So let's not forget that side of things as well. So I think he's done a great job for us.
Yeah, he's been fantastic. And let's hope he can do a little bit more and go for the bigger one this season. But do you think, obviously, Liverpool drew 2-2 with West Ham. You think that's Liverpool out of it now? I mean, mathematically, no. But I'd say because there's two teams above them, it makes it very difficult, doesn't it? And they're sort of capitulation, if you like, has not been compared to what we did last season, which I think was harsh on us actually last season for many a reason. I think because, you know, one, we were playing likes of Rob Holding at centre back. We didn't have our full team. Like they've got all their players back when they've actually dropped these points. And the other thing was that they had the easiest running. I mean, if you remember looking at it, we all looked at it about eight. And we all said they've got the easiest. Not only are they top, they've That's got right. the easiest running. And that wasn't the case with us. I mean, we had to still go to Man City at the point where Correct. We typically, you know, they didn't have anything like that. So that is quite incredible. I have to say, I say it to the Liverpool fans I know as well. I think what they've done is in terms of like announcing the Klopp departure and basically announcing their new manager already. I said, that's just so unprofessional. It's almost self-sabotage as well. I said, I mean, it's just unbelievable to me. I mean, I get Klopp announced his departure. That's probably something they couldn't prevent. But they basically almost announced that's the weird, new manager isn't it, right? during a title race. I said, I don't understand. I don't understand why you would even contemplate doing that, even if you set something up, make sure nothing is exposed, but you're like being freely open about it. I mean, they're interviewing the manager about it. And and I have to say, I mean, this was before they dropped points and they were sort of talking about the managers coming in. And I thought maybe they'll get away with it. But I was like, that now we're looking back, I was like, that's just completely self-sabotage. I mean, fantastic from our point of view, but just ridiculous from there. And they're like, oh, no, you know, we couldn't avoid it. I said, you could avoid it. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And I said, it's really disrespectful. I mean, even when Wenger left, there was a lot of fan uproar when he was leaving, a lot of divide. But there was none of that. There wasn't us announcing managers while he was way. I mean, it's not the way we handle things. To be honest, I didn't think it was the way Liverpool handle things, really.
Yeah, it's surprising.
I said, that's a Chelsea move, that. I said, that's a Chelsea move.
Yes, good point.
And they didn't like that either. But I said, genuinely, though, that's a sort of Chelsea thing. Yeah. And very true. But yeah, I probably agree there. But Bournemouth are, I think, since one of the most on-form teams. They are one of the best counter-attacking teams. They're like most counter-attacking goals this season. They're really dangerous. Really, really dangerous team. I know Mikel Arteta knows their coach well. He's got, you know, a good pedigree. And I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. So, Neil, what's your prediction? So it's an early kickoff on Saturday. And we all know playing Bournemouth at home and what it brought to us last season. Going 2-0 down early and things like that. It's a massive game, and everyone is at the moment, but this is, you know, it's the next one, and it's the biggest one at this point.
Yeah, I think it's the toughest of the three. I really do. I know that's being a little bit disrespectful to United, but I don't really care. And Everton,
in the footballing sense, yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, Everton, I know it's slightly different dynamic because we could actually be going for the league this time on our last game. But generally, we are almost, I think, literally flawless on our last games of the season. We always do, and we actually score quite big. I'm not suggesting for a minute that's going to happen. I'm not taking nothing for granted, and I'm not getting complacent. I think there's still three very tough games. All I'm saying is I think Bournemouth might be the trickiest of the three. So I'm not going to like be stupid with a scoreline, because I know what they can do. I know what happened last season. Thankfully, you know, Reece Nelson was popped up with probably one of the best moments in the Emirates history, just talking about that a little bit earlier with that late winner. But I think we'll be all right as long as we don't make any stupid errors. Like you said, it's like we've had a great defensive record, but the goals we've leaked have not been because the other team has created a great goal. It's because mainly because of our errors. So if we can stamp that out and not do that, I don't see any reason why we can't win this game. And I'll be a bit sensible. I think I'll go for 2-0, actually. I'll just go 2-0. I think we'll have another, hopefully, a clean sheet. I think we're a little bit more vulnerable at home, as we saw with Villa. But I think Villa was, a lot of that was down to, I know it shouldn't affect us, but Liverpool actually losing to Palace that day, I think, caused us undue pressure. Because almost it was like, you have to win now. You've got a chance to move away from them. And that might have added a little bit of pressure onto us. I'm sure the players and everyone knew the result, the Liverpool result. I'm sure they did. So I think we're not going to have that, hopefully, this time. It's not going to be easy, Jack, as you said, because they are the informed team, or one of the informed teams, and they're great on the counter. But I think we'll have too much for them. I think it'll be 2-0 for me. And I think I don't know whether he'll start, but I hope he does, and I hope he scores. So I'll go 2-0 Martinelli.
He needs a goal, doesn't he? Yeah, we're definitely worried, because obviously the Villa game, we do look a little bit more vulnerable at home, pressure, whatever it might be. Villa game was the last home game. Oh, no, sorry, Chelsea game was the last home game. So we responded there. But again, sometimes when you have a few days break, which we do have, you know, the tiredness can seep into the legs. When you're constantly playing, it doesn't. Now we have this little bit of a break. So does he freshen up the team or not? I don't know. I do think the left wing one is something he might look at. Trossard had the least touches out of any player against Spurs. I felt he was largely... ineffective. Yeah, I felt he was ineffective, and he just has some of those games from the start. You never know when they're going to come with Trossard, but he's been on such a fantastic run. So I don't know. He doesn't usually have two in a row, so it might be, you know, start him again. But it's a hard one. But beyond that, yeah, I don't really see much change unless there's a fitness issue somewhere. But I do think Bournemouth are dangerous, very, very dangerous. They've looked really good in games that I've seen them in, and they're on a really good run as well. They've been winning a lot of games. So I'll go 2-1 Odegaard. I'll go 2-1 Odegaard. And then City play well. Yeah, the goal difference is, we're still, you know, good on the goal difference. It doesn't mean anything unless City drop points, of course, but it's no longer as big as it was, you know. So, you know, with City, that could be, you know, they've still got that game in hand as well, so that could be something that they catch back. But I think at this point, you just got to make sure you win your games and hope the rest take care of itself, really, haven't you, really? But yeah, Neil, a fantastic win in the derby, even if it was a little bit nervy, a little bit tetchy at the end there. Mikel Arteta looked absolutely delighted at the end. I love his comments. Yeah. I was just, what were you doing at 3-2? He said, just praying, to be honest. And I thought that was fantastic. You know, just that sort of like honest insight, which you don't always get from him. So it was great, though. Winning the derby.
Did you see him kiss Rayo as well at the end? Did you see that?
Yeah, went straight over.
Kissed his chest or kissed his top of his shoulder. Yeah.
Yeah, he really loved his response, didn't he? Yeah, he couldn't tell. He's wanted him. I mean, he may have been the first player we were linked to. I mean, or one of. I mean, he was literally one of the... He knew he loved him since day one, before we'd had him, you know. And I think Rea responded really well, and hopefully he continues to do that. And hopefully we can get back to just making a few little less errors defensively, because I've been so... I'm impressed with our attacking abilities in the last few games, but defensively, a couple of moments where we've switched off. So hopefully we can get back to,
fingers crossed,
to being the best defence in the league. But three to go, got to win the next one. We're at Purely Arsenal FP on Twitter. Follow us at YouTube. You can go to Purely Arsenal and subscribe there. And get us your questions in. If you've got any questions or comments about the podcast, just go to our Twitter account at Purely Arsenal FP, and we'll answer you there. Thanks for tuning in. Neil, thank you. James had to rush off. He got called in early. You know, like maybe Yuri and Timber might next week. You never know. Might make the squad. Never know.
God, don't.
I don't think he'll play at all, but he might make the squad. Played 70 minutes, didn't he, during the,
during
the Tottenham game, or around that time when we played. And all I saw some highlights. Yeah, he looks, I mean, do you know what's interesting? Oh, sorry, we're going to go. We just said, even in that under 21 game that he played at the weekend,
70 minutes,
but again, left back. Do you know what I mean? He's playing left back every game, and they're not moving him around much. And I know we don't really know what type of defender we're going to sign in the summer, but I do get the feeling left back is what he's been. I mean, that's where he was playing before he got injured as well, wasn't he?
Yeah,
I mean, pre-season, ever since Barcelona, funnily enough, which was the game I went to, I think that was his first game he played at left back. And he was unbelievable against Barcelona. I remember sitting next to Garrett, and he was poor in the game before against United. He played right back. We were all over the place.
Right, okay.
And he played left back, and we went, how good has Timber been in this game against Barcelona? Yeah. He was fantastic. And then he played every game leading up to the Community Shield at left back, and I just get the feeling that's going to be his position for us. And he looks a tank, doesn't he? He looks he's a beast.
Oh, what a player.
He's such a player, and he's so good.
I can't wait. I mean, I know I'm skipping ahead, of course. I want to see the end of this season and maybe we lift the title. But I actually, part of me cannot wait to see him next season.
Yeah,
I just can't wait for
it. It's a new signing, isn't it? It really is. And that's something that people have disregarded, unless you're an Arsenal fan. What are your thoughts on the new kits that we've seen, Neil? I think they've been confirmed. What are your thoughts on them? The home one, I think it's the home one's definitely been confirmed by.
Right.
Horses. The away one, not so much, but from the people that released the home one, it's following the same track. I should show a picture of them. The home one mimics the 99 shirt when we switched from JVC to Sega
or
for 2 years and it went 1 year JVC, 1 year Sega. All I remember is an Elka in it, you know. But
that's it.
But what are your thoughts on the home one anyway? I like it a lot. A lot of people moaning about too much white and blue on it, but I like it a lot personally.
No, I like it. I think it's a little bit different and maybe it'll be a good omen for us. Who knows? But I like it. It's quite smart. I think the kits generally, since Adidas came back to us, have been pretty decent, I think. I mean, maybe one or two have been a bit funny when, you know, you've got that crazy luminous high-vis, whatever the hell it is. But
has
actually,
it grown on you, that one?
In a way, it has, because we've been doing quite well with it, right?
Yeah, best away record in the league.
And even the third kit, the slightly dark green, I think that looks quite smart. To be honest, I haven't really disliked any of them, to be honest, since Adidas have come back. I know we've had some really, they did that pink one, but actually that was quite nice.
Apparently, Arteta hated that, though, didn't he, apparently?
Yeah, he hated it. But do you know what?
When I first, 3 times.
That's right. But I saw it and I heard it when we all saw pictures, and I thought, what the hell are we doing? But then when I saw people wearing it, I thought, you know what? It doesn't look bad.
That's lovely. Yeah.
You've got it, haven't you?
Yeah, I bought it because it's the only kit my kids were really excited about wearing, you know, because the pink one, you know, they wanted to wear that. But
I don't think there's been a really horrendous kit. Now, as I said, that the most crazy one has actually grown on me because we've been doing so well in it. So no, I like the home kit.
Well, it's funny, Neil. You know, when we won titles, I don't know if it's a good omen, but when we have won titles in my history, I've never liked the shirts on the seasons we've won titles. There was the season we went, the season we went invincible. It was that.
Yeah.
I did not like that yellow away shirt at all. It was the blue collar. Triangle. Yeah. I hate shirts with collars anyway. I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the home shirt that season either. It was the circular collar. I didn't like that. And then 2002 was the gold away shirt, which I think I actually quite liked. But looking back, it's
Steel Van Wiltor, yeah?
Yeah, it's not typical. Yeah, it's Silver, of course. A lot of the ones we've worn throughout, you know, the seasons we've actually won something. The 98 one was the JVC blue line across the yellow, wasn't it? I didn't particularly like any of those shirts, to be honest. So it's interesting. I don't particularly like this year's away one. So you never know. It could be a good owner.
You never know.
Yeah. Interesting. But I always like looking at shirts. But interestingly, if we're in a title race at the end of the season, apparently that they will not release the home shirt on the last day of the season like they have done for previous seasons. Apparently not, because you know, if you do win it, and I thought back to Everton at home in 98, and they didn't change a shirt. It was the same. Even though we used to wear them for 2 years then, so you don't really know. But
it was 2 years. Yeah.
So it'll be interesting, but I always like the release of the shirts because it tells me.
I know you do. You love it. You love that in your transfers. So you're the best time for you is coming very soon now.
I'm a kid at heart. But there we go. But thank you, boys and girls. Listen to us on Purely Arsenal FP and YouTube Purely Arsenal, when we're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and some of your rubbish apps. And you can find us there. Free to go. Up the Arsenal. Keep the belief. We can do it.